So the benefit that night that's going to be at the International Cup Cafe in New Columbia is a fundraiser for an upcoming trip that some of the comrades will be taking to Africa, to different countries in Africa, and helping set up educational centers. So just want to let people know about that.
So keeping the momentum going.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for letting us in on all that stuff. We hope that all of you who are listening to this right now, come on down and see us on Saturday. Come see Mike and Mama C on, and Eugene Rashad on Saturday night. And we look forward to talking to you all next Wednesday.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland. In the background there, fellow Ransom Kuti and the Africa 70. Coming up on Occupy Radio, we're going to have some recordings from a community gathering that was held in Dawson Park on International Women's Day. And much more. So stay tuned.
PM to hear part two of Maya Shenhwar speaking about her book, Locked Down, Locked Out, Why Prison Doesn't Work, and How We Can Do Better. Professor Rachel Cunliffe will also be giving commentary during part two.
Building a different world beyond prison is not just about knocking prison down, it's about raising up not only alternatives to dealing with conflict, but a world where people are cared for. If people are cared for, you're going to see a lot less harm. You're going to see a lot less violence, and you're going to see fewer survival times, too.
Again, that's March 23rd at 6:30 p.m. for part two of this conversation with Maya Shenhwar.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Last Days in Vietnam, a film screening on Thursday, March 19th at Concordia University in Portland. Last Days in Vietnam is a new documentary from Rory Kennedy which examines the final days of American presence in Saigon and the efforts taken to evacuate 135,000 South Vietnamese. Again, that's Last Days in Vietnam, Thursday, March 19th at 6 p.m. at the Hagen Building at Concordia University, 2811 Northeast Holman Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Occupy Radio. I'm Jimmy Tardy. Today, we are going to hear some audio from a community event that was organized by Ms. Teresa Rayford. It took place at Dawson Park on International Women's Day. We're going to hear some remarks from Sharon Maxwell concerning the recent visit by Oliver North, of all people. We're going to hear from Vanessa Crawford and Lori Palmer about a new effort called Go Get Your Kids. And we're also going to hear from Carol Littleton Kelly from the Church Networkers group. And that will be followed by some in-depth interview with Bayo Akomolafe. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Bayo is an ethno-psychotherapeutic researcher, lecturer, and author from Covenant University in Nigeria. He's an international speaker, poet, and activist for radical systemic shifts in current social, political, and economic configurations. He's coordinator of the International Alliance for Localization, and he's an emerging voice in the world calling for new forms of consciousness by turning to each other in small ways and reconnecting with our, quote, shamanic effusiveness and utter magnificence. We had a chance to hang out with Bio during the Economics of Happiness conference that was recently held at the Unitarian Church in downtown Portland. He was nice enough to spend a little time with us and talk about basically where he's coming from, Nigeria, and some of his experiences in reconnecting with his cultural roots there and the value that he finds as a Western-trained psychotherapist in using some of those shamanic practices to connect with people who are experiencing mental illness. I'm going to go back now to a little Fela Kuti, and then we're going to mix things up a little bit. We're even operating some turntables in the mix tonight, so stay tuned and pay attention.
One, two, three, four. I'm a woman, I'm a human, I'm a sister. I'm a singer, I'm a person, I am me. I have to be alone to get myself together.
I'm a woman. I am free. I'm respected.
I'm not
Hold
getting
my
that.
Head up high. Understand?
Okay, Rico.
No,
tell
I thought,
me. I'll tell her.
I thought I was getting that across.
Tomato sauce people are going to be here. Clients, and we're trying to syndicate this internationally.
Okay, it's fine. I understand. I was thinking of melody and not meaning. Okay. I'm sorry. I was concentrating on the melody and everything. Right. Okay.
Well, you're doing fine. You're doing fine.
Okay, thanks. All right.
Honey, I think what they need is a little more anthem quality, you know?
Okay.
Free, well, you know, it's all up, everything ends up. No, it's not, you know, don't sing it.
We've got the song. Rico's written the song. We need the talent.
Okay,
I'm,
it's okay. All right, guys, I can do it. It's a perfect key. I'm fine. I don't know what happened there. I just went a little haywire there. Okay, let's go again.
One, two, three, four.
What was wrong?
Jane, talk to her, please.
You're using your wine voice.
I wasn't using my wine voice. I wasn't.
All right. Paul,
don't bring.
Can you do it?
I know the melody. Yes.
I'm a woman.
I know the melody. Fine, if you don't mind.
Reach up for those high parts, okay?
Okay.
Open your mouth.
All right. I know.
If you keep hopping and jiggling around like that.
Well, I'm not going to do that on the day that I do it. I'm just doing it now. It helps me get into the meaning and the rhythm of the song.
He's saying for right now. Can you do that?
Oh, he's shooting right now.
Can you sing the lyrics?
Yes, I can sing the lyrics and look at the camera. Just
I'm a woman. Do you understand that?
I understand.
She's done this.
All right, could you let me start it again? I'll start. Just start it again, all right? Just
you want a lower key, those high notes?
No, I don't need a lower key.
Right.
Just start it again, all right? Just start it.
Two.
Keep her eyes on the red light.
Do it.
Jumping around. I have to do it with
Jean, I thought you said you could hack it.
she can hack it.
I can hack it. I thought she could hack it. I have to do the jumping around part.
I thought she could hack it, but it looks like she's having a tantrum.
I'm not having a tantrum.
It's the seal. The twins could sing it.
I can do it if you let me do it the way that I want to do it. Why don't you let me do it the way I want to do it? If I want to do it.
Let's
do it. I'm a woman.
That was, of course, the incomparable Miss Gilda Radner from Greatest Hits of the National Lampoon, in honor of her contributions in a variety of ways. And now we're going to go to, again, that community gathering that was organized by Teresa Rayford over in Dawson Park. We're going to hear first from Sharon Maxwell and some of her thoughts about the recent visit to Portland by Oliver North, who some of you may remember that name associated with the Iran-Contra scandal. We'll go to that now.
Okay, so I'm going to begin. I'm Sharon Maxwell, and as you know, I ran for city council against Nick Fish. And the reason why I ran is because I could not sit back another day, another minute, another hour and watch the dishonesty that they were practicing about saying what they were doing for this community, which we are standing in, North Northeast community. When I seen all of the renovation, the whole gentrification, the displacement taking place, and those dollars were supposed to be helping existing residents, not the newbies, not those people coming from California. Sam Adams, the mayor that was here before, took taxpayers' money and went out and recruited people to move here to this city just because they wanted to show that this is a livable and sustainable community. But how can you have a livable and sustainable community when the very people that are being destroyed and are desperate and adversely impacted by the destruction of drugs and crack cocaine, the over-incarceration of brown and black males that have happened in this city and in this state along and across America, I'm not going to take that anymore. And we cannot, as a people in general, continue to sit back and wait for other people to really do for us as a community and as a people what we really need to be doing for ourselves. And so I'm actually here too today because we're going to be rallying against the number of persons that will be here next Saturday at the Oregon Convention Center. Oliver North, who was charged and indicted and convicted of war crimes, is connected with a group, a right-wing Christian and Republican group that are touting themselves as maybe the group family values and right to life and that type of thing. But here they have an association with a known war criminal who basically was the author of the rogue National Security Council that basically created the crack cocaine that was money laundering, bringing in illegal weapons. And so I'm going to read this statement, and I want to share just one brief story, but I'm asking people to come out next Saturday, March 14th at 11 a.m. to the Oregon Convention Center to rally against Oliver North, who does not need to represent, he does not represent family values, because the fact that he destroyed all of our families.
He messed them up.
What they basically did was brought in a chemical warfare that stripped us of our dignity and destroyed our community and wiped out generations of wealth. In the beginning of the war on drugs that came to Portland, Oregon in 1980, the CIA rogue officers and counterterrorism, they have the nerve to even have him speaking as a counterterrorism expert when basically what it is a bogus cover-up for a continuation of secret powers. The National Security Advisor, which during the time of President Ronald Reagan, Robert McFarlane, Caspar Weinberger, Hezbollah, Contras, Oliver North, Mannequin Gobinar, John Poindexter, and Manuel Noriega were all indicted and charged with war crimes and charges of money laundering, illegal weapons, and crimes of war. They received a pardon by guess who? George H.W. Bush. The Senator John Kerry subcommittee investigated them all for the drug trafficking, the illegal weapons that were being permitted and granted by political illegitimacy by the Reagan administration and his Secretary of State. Oliver North was the ringleader of this all. The Reagan administration was behind the false war on drugs that not only was supposed a war on drugs, but on every American citizen across America. How did drugs and crack cocaine and illegal weapons by the thousands make it onto the streets of Los Angeles and 22 other major urban African-American communities, which eventually made it across America into every part of the fabric of our society? After the investigations and the conviction, President Ronald Reagan agreed to cease and desist the war on drugs, but law enforcement and the DOJ were hell-bent on prosecuting this fabricated war on drugs after they had seen the epidemic proportions and the destruction, but it was really the money that they were making off of the system of school-to-prison pipeline. Damn. And incarcerating brown and black males at an enormous rate to where it is now 50% of the people that are in prison are either African-Americans or people of color. What this has done to our community, it's impacted the health and welfare of our families. We've been stripped and violated of our human rights, our civil rights, our constitutional rights. Freedom of our liberties have been stolen and taken away, and the community has been further marginalized. And then I want to read this information, which is on my, I have a Facebook page. It's Fair-Minded Oregonians for Right Values. And this is the story. There have been incidents along our nation's path that are outright disgusting. With racial amnesty, the internment of American Japanese descendants during World War II, along with the seizures of their land and businesses, is a good example. The Trail of Tears, which was forced marched by the foot of the Cherokee Indian Nations from North Carolina to Oklahoma, was a downright atrocity. Another sickly example was the sending blankets to select Indian tribes that were laced with smallpox. That's right. These and other examples are not consistent with our Constitution. There is another example that is much more modern. In fact, it is current. It is the U.S. Department, State, and Central Intelligence Agency got together, filled our city streets with crack cocaine. First of all, let me recommend the current movie, Kill the Messenger. So if you haven't seen that, it's called Kill the Messenger. It deals with the part of the mega atrocity. It starts in 1979 when the Marxist group known as the Sandinista National Liberation Front chasing out the dictator Anastasio Somoza. Thus, the CIA went to work and recruited some anti-communists to physically try to overthrow the new leader of the nation. This group came to be known as the Contras. The Contras were fully financed by the U.S. government and were housed next door in Honduras. As they attacked the Sandinistas and hid out in Honduras, their popularity decreased throughout Congress. Congress eventually outlawed any federal funding for this activity by the way of the Boland Amendment. President Reagan pledged to follow the law. However, there were zealots in his administration that decided to go rogue. So operatives in the CIA, White House, and the State Department came up with a scheme to generate big cash in the support of the Contras. They would take from the CIA's arsenal of weapons and sell them to Iran. Keep in mind, there was a big trade embargo on Iran because of the raid on our embassy there. Iran was more than willing because they were in a big war with Iraq and desperately needed more weapons, aircraft launchers, artillery, and the such. In return for the weapons, they would launder top dollar cash for each shipment and directed the money to the Contras. This went along until they were busted in 1987. All hell broke loose and their scheme was shut down. 11 high-ranking officials were prosecuted and sentenced to prison. They were immediately pardoned doing these appeals and walked free by George H.W. Bush. Now these evildoers had to come up with another scheme to keep the big cash flowing down to the Contras. The next move would be even more sinister. The CIA was already involved in some of the drug running that was going on in the United States. They decided to recruit some of the major cartel partners with them. Thus, around 1988, the first shipment of cocaine started to arrive in Los Angeles for distribution throughout the nation. Shortly thereafter, some of the chemists working for the cartels told the CIA operatives of a new derivative of the cocaine. It came to be known as crack. Crack was much cheaper in price to make, but was so profitable to the sellers. Also, it was much more addictive and caused the users to be fanatical in their dependence on it. Users would do anything, including murder, to satisfy their addictions. All of a sudden, there were New Jack cities going up all over America. In charge of the distribution were the Central Americans named Oscar Blandon, a Los Angeles opportunist named Rick Ross, okay, who's got his CDs? Stop It, a.k.a. Free Willy. Ricky lived off the Harbor Freeway in South Central. I witnessed what his activity was doing to the neighborhoods of Los Angeles. It was like a ghetto epidemic. Blandon and Ross got so large when Ross recruited the Crips and Bloods from Los Angeles. These street gangs would set up chapters in most of major cities. They would form two separate lines of distributors, flushing our communities with the evil crack cocaine. In the aforementioned movie, the CIA director Don Deutsch admitted that the CIA was involved in drug dealing within the black communities, and then he resigned. He said the value was $1 billion, but that was a lie because it was more than that. In 1 year alone, Freeway Ricky's cut was $600 million. The director resigns. Blandon walks away, goes back to Central America. Ross gets less than 9 years. So Rick Ross actually served 9 years in prison, and Oliver North gets a pardon. Really? Mm-hmm. Who knows how many people died from this activity related to crack cocaine? Well, I know right here in Portland, Oregon, your legacy is that you stood up for constitutional rights for all people and that all people matter.
That's right.
And you can find the information, Maxwell Sharon, on the Facebook, or I'm also on the Portland Police Reform Advisory Committee, as Sharon at Portland COAB, and Fair-Minded Oregonians for the Right Values. Thank you.
Thank you,
Sharon.
Yay.
All right. I was going to say, also, we have a show that kicks off.
You're listening to Occupy Radio. That was some comments from Miss Sharon Maxwell that she shared at a community gathering in Dawson Park on this past International Women's Day. Right now you're listening to Musica Tive, music from Nigeria. We're going to go back to that Dawson Park gathering. And now we're going to hear from both Vanessa Crawford and Lori Palmer with Go Get Your Kids.
And so I wanted to go ahead and bring up a mother who's up here now. First of all, I'm going to bring up my friend Vanessa, who's here.
so that she can talk about some of the things that she wants to use her voice to do to inspire us and to empower us. And so I just want us to come together as a community, because if you close your eyes and you look at a youth as a youth and not as a person with color, then I think that you'll have a lot more of a heart to reach out to those that are being hurt. It's not about color at the end of the day. It's really our youth. And right now, if we don't band together, a lot of us won't be able to draw Social Security. You have to think about your future. It's nothing to do with color. There's a lot of things that's going on within color, yes. Don't get me wrong. But we have to start closing our eyes and looking at it's a human life. We have to value that human lives are being taken from not just police, not just within color, but within people who have power.
I want to buy my chips.
So I encourage everybody to just simply get involved. I am a victim of the Portland police. I would like to share that because I was pulled over. Police officer just pulled me over. No reason did he give me. Not one reason. He released me to go, but when I asked him for his badge number, he then gave me a ticket. How unright is that?
Yeah, that's racist.
Mm-hmm. I was profiled. He gave me a ticket 9 blocks later. My ticket says that I failed to stop for a pedestrian. But let me share this with you. My tags on my car was expired because I could not register my car because it was from another state and they couldn't find the VIN number. But you gave me a ticket for failure to stop for a pedestrian. I was profiled. This is something that happens all the time. Not just to black men, but to black women. I have no felonies. I don't really have a record. I mean, we've all done some things. But these are things that we have to look at. We have to look at it not just for us, but what about one of your kids? What about one of your kids' choices? And I think sometimes we don't look past the tip of our nose to see the future for somebody else. Today is today, but we have to look about tomorrow too. And that's what I say. I'm here to support whatever our community do. Because Northeast community is no longer the inner Northeast for color people. It's for everybody else if you look around. Yeah. Now we got Sister Lori Palmer up here with Go Get Your Children. She got a message for us. Well, my message is, you see what I'm wearing? It's a war in the streets. It's a war going on in the streets. We just lost a young man this morning to gang violence. We had one shot at yesterday. My son, Jasmine Antoine Moore, was shot 4 times on January the 11th. He's right over there in Emmanuel Hospital. I tell you, I got on my army fatigue. Where's my lieutenant at? Come on. This is the lieutenant? No, yeah. She's the general. I'm the lieutenant, and we finna go into this community. Young men, you need to disarm yourself. Stop killing your brother. Yes. I got to go get your child. All of you guys standing here, it's up to us to go into our community and take back our kids. They can throw money at it. They can have government meeting after government meeting. But until we, ourselves, go into our community and take back our child. Some of you mothers and fathers listening to me, you might not be in a position where you can reach your child. But you can go and you can go there and make whatever you need to do, make it right with your child. Yes. I had to go to my child and say, son, forgive me for being on drugs and alcohol. Forgive me for you being in foster homes. But I straightened up my life in 1991. I took back my life, and that's what we have to do. We have to go back into the community and take back our life, take back our children,
back.
Put down the guns, and stop the violence.
Yes.
Stop it. Right. That's my message. And if you're looking for me, I am just, I'm on fire. I'm tired of the killings.
We gotta stand together, y'all.
Somebody lost a child. I don't know you, ma'am. Somebody lost a child this morning.
Yes.
One got shot at yesterday. Lady, I don't know you, but here's my pain to you. Stand up. Get involved in this movement. Yes. It's about the sadness that you got right now. This is where you need to funnel it. You need to come here. You need to come and help us take back our community. Don't let your son's death be in vain. Rise up with your son
and bring your son to the forefront and take back this community. That's what I'm doing with my son.
Yes.
That's what I'm doing. I could have sat in the corner. I could have got drunk. I could have did a whole lot of things. But I chose to get up with God and all strength in my power and yes. stand here and tell you you chose the wrong one
all right.
to shoot.
All right.
And you chose all right. the wrong mother.
Right.
And you chose the wrong one, and you know who I'm talking about, the kick to the curb. Because I'm going to encourage myself. I'm going to encourage this sister right here because she came and encouraged me, and she got my back. And we, together, is standing for nonviolence. Put down your guns. Stop killing each other. You're killing yourself. Bone to bone, flesh to flesh. You're killing yourself. Stop it. Everybody else don't care. Let me tell you something. Them meetings, I sat in the gang task force meetings for 3 years. Not one of them came to my side.
Man.
This sister came to my side, and this is all that counts.
And ain't going nowhere.
Let me tell you something. She showed up. She said, it ain't about Portland, don't shoot PDX. It's about you. Go get your children. We're going to represent. And we are in this community with some realness. And we ain't got no checks. Ain't nobody paying us.
Okay.
Ain't nobody paying us. We paying with our pain. We losing our loved ones.
Yes. The only person you guys need to stop. System that eats up of our dead children. And we need to stop that break right now.
Right now. They going home to nice houses. Oh, having white parties. Oh, driving Bentleys.
Right.
And why they getting a check to save our kids? They don't care about our kids.
Don't care.
I gave the detectives. The man that I told them everything they needed to know to go get the man to kill my son. Do you know what they're doing? Because they want them to stay in the community and keep killing themselves.
Right. Yes.
And you know what they told me? You know what they told me? Did they tell each other? Don't listen to those mothers because they don't know what they're talking about. I had one tell me that's what they tell each other over there in the police department and the gang task force. Don't you listen to them. They don't know what they're talking about. Well, we know what we're talking about.
Right.
We're talking about our kids.
Yes.
Bone to bone, flesh to flesh. Stop playing with my children. Stop playing with my community.
That's
Stop
it.
Playing with it. That's Get out here and do what you're supposed to do. What you're getting paid to do.
Right.
Stop. I'm tired of us having to get on camera.
Yes.
I just got done talking to Pearlie Bell. She said, I don't want to get on another camera.
Right.
She said, I'm tired of people having meetings, not doing nothing. Her baby got killed. What we gonna keep on having? It's just funerals and shootings.
Yes.
Them people is not doing their job. And it's up to each and every one of us to call them on this.
That's
we
right.
are calling you on your
call
stuff.
You out.
Get out here. We want to see you, Mayor. We want to see you in this community. We want to see you make your money. Your check, that's what you're getting
that's
paid
right.
for. You come out here and you do it. Because you know what?
Right.
I'm going to keep on showing up. And check this out. Take a bullet about mine. You mess with the wrong one, and I'm not playing, because I'm encouraging myself with Jesus Christ. No weapon formed against me shall prosper.
Yeah.
So let me tell you something.
Yes,
let me tell you something. Oh, y'all started a war.
That's it.
Boy, got my army fatigue on.
She
ain't
playing.
And it ain't no angry black woman either. I'm a painful black woman. You feel my pain. That's what you feel.
Right on. So this is one of the things that we need to recognize is that we'll show up for a funeral, but we're not showing up for a solution. We are the solution. We don't show up, nothing is going to happen about the murders that's going down in our community, whether they're perpetrated by the police or each other. At some point, we got to say enough is enough, and we have to be the ones to do something about it. Don't think that the system is going to take care of your children, because if you do an audit of the budgets, they benefit from the death. All of the poverty funding that comes through the federal government to all of these different agencies and organizations because of these problems, they can be going to our solutions. We could be building programs to help our children identify jobs and industries that affect their lives in the future that will take them out of this poverty.
Yes.
But we're spending too much money on incarceration.
Yes.
Let's turn that around. Let's break this system. Let's do it together. We are stronger than we believe. We have to believe in each other.
Kaduna to Sokoto, Ibadan to Ilorin,
This is Occupy Radio. That was Lori Palmer with Go Get Your Kids. The music you hear in the background there is Eric Showboy Ikezi and his Royal Erikos. We define money. This is Occupy Radio. We're going to go back to Carol Littleton Kelly with the Church Networkers. She was also out at that community forum that was organized by Teresa Rayford at Dawson Park on International Women's Day. We're going to wrap up the show with some remarks from Bayo Akomolafe. He's a Nigerian ethno-psychotherapeutic researcher talking about reconnecting with some of his cultural roots and using shamanic practices to deal with mental illness in the community. But first, we're going to go back to Carol Littleton Kelly with the Church Networkers, again from that community forum that was organized on International Women's Day at Dawson Park by Teresa Rayford.
Here from the Church Networkers, and I know she got something to say. Come on, sis, because we got to get your voice on the...
My name is Carol Littleton Kelly, and I'm representing Church Networkers, and I've been knowing Teresa for a couple years now and stopping the violence that's going on in the city of Portland. Right now, what we're trying to do is trying to get the church community to come together and back this sister up, back up the things that she's standing for. All of us have
back
children.
Back up our community.
Some of us.
Back up the community.
But for those
our
who
community
care
service.
About our youth of tomorrow, we should be standing up and backing her up.
That's right,
so
sister.
My thing right now is the church community to get behind her
That's
on
right.
our level, on our page, and not just sit behind four walls in the church,
That's
but
right.
to come out into the community because we're all people.
Yes.
People who have children. We have mothers and fathers and sons that have been shot and cousins and things like that. It's not just only because I'm black, but white people too have had children that are being killed. The people that are in the office that could be helping us are not right now. So they need to get out of the office and help the people who need to be helped. It's not just a black thing or just a white thing. It's not just only a racial thing, but we're people. We're talking about human rights. We're all human. We're all people. You can't just kill people on a daily basis just because you feel like it. If this situation was reversed and a lot of white people would be getting killed, I would be concerned. I would really be concerned about that because it's all about the control in the federal government. You got to care about all the people that's in this country. You know, it's not about having a nice car and a nice home and only your family is getting taken care of. There's middle class people, there's poor people and poverty people. We're all trying to take care of all of our families, no matter what our race or color is. But it just happened to be right now at this point in time in this era, in this community of gentrification, a lot of African Americans are being targeted that are getting killed. And for no reasons. Now, we do have crime in every race. But in this area here, people are getting killed just for walking across the street.
Yes.
People
right.
are getting killed just for driving a car. I got pulled over. I'm not the most perfect person in the world, but I'm not one, you know, that's doing drugs, crack, and cocaine and things and stuff like that. But I got pulled over, was getting a ticket for nothing. I was just driving. And I talked to the police officer, and I heard this one of the young ladies say, that she asked the police officer, what are you pulling me over for? We can't even ask them that. I went to a meeting downtown. It was supposed to be helping the people. He was a police officer, a lawyer, that was trying to tell us.
Oh, Know Your Rights training. Yeah.
Okay, Know Your Rights.
Collective. Benji Bell put that together. Right
uh-huh.
on, bro.
Well, I went down there to the Know Your Rights, and he did give a lot of good information, but the information that he was giving was not for me. And what I mean by that is the people of color. Because he told me that I can walk up to a police officer and question him and ask him questions. Why are you arresting me? What is the point? What is this? What is your badge number? I can't do that. And whether if I look like a business person or not, it doesn't even matter. I can look like a gang member. It don't even matter. I can look like I just walked out of the mayor's office downtown. I cannot ask those kind of questions. And even though just the natural person want to know, why am I getting pulled over? Why are you... trying to arrest me for? What have I done? Those are natural questions that any human person would ask. But we can't ask those questions unless something happens. And it's really true. So he was giving us some good advice and the best tips that he can give. There were some American people who was in there that was trying to get that advice. He said if a cop come and knock on your door, you can tell them that they can't come in. Not if you're African-American. I'm just telling what's real. Right. I have white friends. I have Asian friends. I have Iranian friends. But I'm just saying, I know as an African-American, if a cop comes to my house and wants to come in, I cannot tell him that he cannot come in. Because the first thing, well, if you do, then there's the trouble. There's the trouble. You're going to either get shot or killed, or they're going to find a reason, oh, well, you must be guilty. No, this is my home. So you might have children. There's children who got shot and killed because cops were busting the doors in. The little girl that was there with her grandmother, they busted into the home. And I don't know what they were saying about the grandmother, but they shot the seven-year-old girl. She was 7 years old. Now, she was not my daughter, but I could have cried to death. I do have a granddaughter that's 10 years old. I could cry to death if a cop busted in my house and you tried to ask him why is he coming in, and the little girl comes out to see what's going on, and because they didn't take the time to see who she was, you'd have shot and killed her. Now, she's 7 years old. So the thing that I'm upset about today, I like life to be fair. I like people who are good people to be treated right and just. If you're doing crime, then you have to do the time. I believe in those things. But when you're harming innocent people, just innocent everyday people, working people, or even if they're not working, their job is to protect the people and to protect the innocent. Right, and if you're not doing that, I'm just saying you just shouldn't be paid. Even if you're a black cop doing bad stuff like that, you shouldn't be paid. You shouldn't be paid. You shouldn't be a cop. So my name is Carol Littleton Kelly, and we're trying to back her up. We got a meeting coming up on the 21st.
We'll be there
at the church. And, yeah, we need all your support. Don't matter if you're a church member or not. We're trying to get church members to come together with some morals and values in this country that we're supposed to be standing up against. And you're talking about constitutional rights. What are they?
You got human rights. You got human rights because our Constitution doesn't allow rights for blacks.
That's right.
And I think we know that.
Been listening to Carol Littleton Kelly. Before that was Lori Palmer, Vanessa Crawford, and Sharon Maxwell. That's in reverse order. They were speakers at a community event at Dawson Park on International Women's Day, organized by Teresa Rayford. We're going to shift gears a little bit here, leave you on a little bit more warm note. We're going to talk with Bayo Akomolafe. He's a PhD ethno-psychotherapeutic researcher from Covenant University in Nigeria. And we had a chance to sit and talk with him when he was in town a couple of weeks ago as part of the Economics of Happiness Conference that was held at the Unitarian Church downtown. We're going to talk with him about his experience in reconnecting with some of his roots, Nigerian shamans and their techniques and efforts at working with people who are experiencing mental illness. Before that, we're going to listen to Songs of Nations by the DePauw Chorus, Leonard DePauw conductor. This is on vinyl. And we're going to listen to a song from Nigeria called Ake, which is a traditional work chant from the Yoruba tribe. Soloist is Jolie Gonsalves.
About the intelligence of the non-human world and how we seem to have lost our sensitivity to the fact that the world is alive and vibrant and agentic and beautiful in ways that do not quite lend themselves to the economic agendas of redemption. Like, we have to go into the world, go to trees and make them useful. You know, indigenous perspectives speak about the world as a consciousness of its own. It's not something that is separate and removed from man. We are part of this web of life. And so my work is to try to revive that consciousness and awareness of the universe as alive.
Where does your sense of the universe being alive come from?
Well, from my work as a psychologist. I'm a clinical psychologist. I did some work with shaman priests in Western Nigeria, where I come from, the Yoruba shaman priests. And they led me or initiated me into a new way of seeing mental illness, what we in the West call mental illness, not as something to be medicated or reduced to biological substrates, but something that is a public event or a public feeling. It's not like it could be individuated, is something that is really powerful and connects everything else. So they, of course, implicated in their explanation the subtle world, spirits, trees, rock. They all have a role to play in how we experience the world. And that awareness has been really inspiring in my work.
And you maybe sought some of this out as a clinical psychologist, is that what
as a, yes, I was pursuing a doctorate degree, and my disenchantments with the political nature of mental illness classification in the West. We have something called DSM manual, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. I felt it didn't really address the concerns of my people or the cultural expectations. I felt it was culturally closed and didn't really speak to the healing requirements of my people. So I went to those people, shaman priests, and they opened me up to a brighter world, so to speak, of mental illness, not as an illness. They don't even refer to it as an illness. They experience it as a dance of spirit. And yeah, that's what led me there.
And so was maybe just the existence of these shaman known to you as you, like, were a child? Was this just...
Nope.
How did the connection come about?
Well, I'd been studying shamanistic literature, and I'd been exploring the possibilities of actually seeking them out in my own community. It's definitely part of the pop culture in Nigeria or in Africa that these men are around. It's just that institutionalized religions have kind of suppressed them, and so they're under the radar right now. For instance, Nigeria is a geopolitical binary between the Islamic North and the Christian South. The place for African traditional religions is not really there anymore, so people don't reckon with these men or their crafts. But I felt a decolonized sensibility should be able to acknowledge the gifts that they have. So I went to look for them, and I found some of them, and it inspired my work.
So I guess if these men are still around, that it's not many generations removed that these men were just sort of acknowledged in Nigerian culture and this type of thing. So I'm guessing maybe it's a recent phenomenon that's been pushed out, or what's up?
It's not that recent. I would boil it down to the resilience. It's something... It's the traditions are resilient, you know. It's not like a professional degree or something. The fathers taught their sons the craft, and they handed it down over and over again. And somehow it survived. I can't tell how, but it survived. And these knowings and awareness is there for anyone who wants to be part of it. Of course, it wasn't so easy to be welcomed into their community. They had to consult their shrines to see whether I was worthy to be part of their knowledge. And they did that. And they found me worthy, and I was able to look into their systems.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So what Western, you know, psychotherapists or thinkers or schools of thought are you interested in?
Definitely Carl Jung and how he implicates the unconscious and the mystical, and Freud, but not the schooled edition of Freud. There's a part of Freud that was really attracted to the spiritual, to the supernatural. We don't get to hear that part because it's kind of suppressed. But I'm definitely attracted to these men and their work. But largely, psychiatric care and psychotherapeutic understanding still boils everything down to pills and diagnostic categories. And I feel we should, that there's something else to be explored. And that's what's taking my time now.
So Freud wrote Civilization and Its Discontents and the Psychopathology of Everyday Life.
Yeah.
Do you feel that there's something like kind of an illness inherent in Western culture itself somehow?
I wouldn't call it an illness, but I think it's you can call it a distortion. It's someone illustrated it to me this way. Like, think of a thread and a knot on that thread. Modern culture, what Freud tried to implicate and articulate, is the curious idea that we're disconnected from everything else. Like, that knot thinks it's discontinuous with the rest of the thread. But when we pull it just a little bit, we see that it expands and it's part of the thread, basically. So I feel, yes, there's the... Maybe I'll use the term illness just for conversational purposes. There is some kind of illness, a failure to reckon with non-human forces that actually shape us. And we've forgotten the sensuousness of the non-human world, and that has boxed us into this economic bubble. And, you know, my work, my voice is about holding space for that which wants to emerge in terms of how we relate with the non-human world and how we revive our sense of humanity from that relations. Yeah.
So if you were going to speak of it outside of terms of illness, how would you describe your take on and your focus when you're working with people who have mental illness? Quotes, air quotes there.
I'm using their own word. They would call it an invitation, not an illness. It can be traumatic, especially when they're not ritual, rituals and communities that can hold space for these powerful experiences are missing. But it's an invitation to consider what wants to be born through you. Like, there's this guy called Malidoma Somme. He's an African shaman who was also trained as a Western psychotherapist. And he also started to unlearn these dynamics. And what he started to recover was a sense of aliveness that is pathologized in mental illness. And so, you know, we treat these experiences as irrationalities, like insane, because they don't add to economic productivity and the agenda of the industrialized world. They don't add to it. So we have to lock them away. But these men, the shaman priests I speak about, and these indigenous wisdoms invite people to see them, these experiences, powerful experiences, as voices from the incomprehensible, things that want to be born again and again through us. And, you know, we need spaces to hold people and to help them bear those, you know, urges and bring it up.
And, you know, perhaps the ritual and the space calms us down as as we apprehend and comprehend and acknowledge this presence.
Yes, they're like vehicles of the sacred. And, of course, modern culture is a desacralization of life. But these cultures acknowledge that life is sacred. So these rituals are like the ways we language the sacred. And until, I'm not saying everyone can participate meaningfully in a ritual, in an African ritual, in an Asian ritual or something, but we definitely need some kind of ritual community to hold us, to embrace us, and to give us meaning during these powerful upheavals of experience, of life, of subjectivity. Yeah.
If someone is experiencing mental illness, the invitation, when you're presented with somebody who's providing this invitation, it can rattle you if you're... And so these rituals in this space, it actually works. It's not for the purposes necessarily of that individual, but it's for the purposes of the rest of us to have something.
Yes, yes. That's a beautiful way of seeing it. So the person, the whole idea of an individual is relatively missing in indigenous cultures. It's not like you're ill. It's like what is seeking to be born through this experience right now, and how can the rest of us share from that? There's a something called dream sharing in a Peruvian culture. I'm not sure, but I know it's probably Peruvian. And the practice is that the elder of a clan, every morning listens to the dreams of each member. It's like dreaming is not a private affair. It's like you share your dreams, and he tries to synthesize all the dreamings, and then he tells a story about what wants to emerge, what the community needs to do, and how they need to atone for this and that and blah, blah, blah. So it's the same way with mental illness. It's not you. It's us. It's a web. It's a network. It's an entanglement. And that's a powerful thing. Yeah.
Could you like just comment on like what the experience was, the subjective experience that you had when you started to see the power of these type of ways of looking at this?
The experience I had was how do I put a word to that? It was nothing short of an awakening. It's like, and that's even generic. I'm looking for a powerful word, a poetic way to frame it. It was like my mind was blown, you know. Here is a person thoroughly trained in Western traditions that sees things in boxes. You're either schizophrenic or you're not. You're bipolar or you're not. But these men don't even they don't have diagnostic categories. They don't say if he exhibits this behavior for 3 weeks, then he's this. It's just, I mean, they said, this is one of them. He's like, I asked him, what does it mean to be mad? You know, breaking it down to a language he could understand. And he said, if you know a madman, you know a madman. So it was, they don't even have descriptive categories. It's narrative. They tell it in stories. The point is not to arrive at a reductionistic noun or something so we can attack the problem. The problem is not in you. The problem is us, so to speak. A problem. It's not even a problem. It's a phenomenon that wants to be born. And so it's what the community names it that it becomes. And so seeing things from a communal, entangled perspective, which I think Western culture is beginning to appreciate, you know, in terms of quantum mechanics and seeing that everything is actually entangled, we're interconnected, we're not separate from everything else, I think is probably the most powerful thing that happened to me, and I don't think I can put a word to it.
How did it feel when you, what was the feeling?
The feeling, okay, you're probing deeper and deeper. You're shrinking me right now. No, it's
you
okay.
You can refuse to answer.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Feeling, it's, well, maybe it paradoxically, no, ironically, not paradoxically, it was, I felt like I'd arrived and I could be me. I don't know if that helps. Like, all this while, I was trained not to speak my language. I was brought up in a system that refused my own identity, my own stories. I had to learn what Freud said. I had to learn what everyone in the West thinks. I had no cultural confidence. And, you know, to hear these stories that, oh, they're alternative ways of seeing the world, seeing the phenomenon of mental illness, it was like a coming home. It was like you're accepted, you're loved just the way you are, and I don't know how to describe the feeling of love except to say that it was the most beautiful feeling I've ever had. Yeah.
This is Occupy Radio. Thank you for joining us tonight. We've been listening to a variety of people with a variety of perspectives and different paths to get to places that we all agree we need to go to heal our communities. Up next is Hard Knock Radio. First, we have a few important messages for you.
Tune in to Ear to the Streets of Portland on March 19th for an interview with special guest Bay Area recording artist Goapele, who will be performing at this year's KBOO-sponsored event, Sold Out Music Festival, on April 15th. It's a night of special guests and performances on Ear to the Streets of Portland with Goapele and local artists Arietta Ward and friends, March 19th, starting at 7 o'clock p.m. right here on your community radio station, KBOO. Tune in.